Today's topic involves an issue that dates back to the beginning of history and has continued down to the present day. It has to do with communication. Communication is one of our most important aspects of human life, obviously, but at the same time, one of mankind's greatest problems. What I'll be talking about in Bible terminology are things like that referred to, and I won't necessarily be using all these terms, but there are several different adjectives that relate to what I'll be talking about that you find in the various translations. I'll read them in alphabetical order. Backbiting, busybodies, gossip, slander, talebearers, and whisperers. Those are all mentioned in the Bible. I was amazed at how many scriptures there are in the subject. I'm not even going to cover all of them today. But as I said, this is a very old problem, as we'll see. I'm going to offer you, first of all, some definitions from the American Heritage Dictionary. The word backbite, we don't use that anymore, basically. You don't feel pain of what happened. Oh, somebody just bit you in the back. It doesn't mean that. I mean, it's a term that refers to speaking spitefully or slanderously about someone. Gossip, we all know what that is. It's rumor or talk of a personal, sensational, or intimate nature. Even though this word is nowhere used in the Old King James, it does appear in the New King James in 1 Timothy 5:13, which we'll read a little bit later. I think, well, what a rumor is, this definition says, unverified information of uncertain origin, usually spread by word of mouth, or a synonym would be hearsay, you know, passing along something you've heard and which may not be true. And of course, after it goes through enough from one person to another, it gets more and more inaccurate. And that's just kind of the nature of the beast. I guess if we'd had the time, we wanted to be creative, I could have had a half a dozen of you come up here and told somebody a joke and you could whisper it down the line. You've probably heard of that game before, haven't you? Anybody played that game? Oh, a lot of you have. Well, what is it? Done at camp, I assume. Okay, I saw all these guys, young guys raising their hands and camp staff person here. Anyway, so you know what I'm talking about, and that's what we're up against when it comes to rumors. Good thing to keep in mind. Slander is defined as the utterance of defamatory statements injurious to the reputation or well-being of a person. And another definition is a malicious statement or report. The Free Online Dictionary defines it as oral communication of false statements injurious to a person's reputation, a false and malicious statement or report about someone. And I was shocked when I found out what the Greek word for slander is. Anybody ever looked that up? Diabolos. What does that also mean? Devil or demon. The word also means slander. That ought to tell us something. And guess what? That's where slander originated. I'll get to that in just a moment, but a couple more definitions first. A talebearer is a person who spreads malicious stories or gossip. And whisperer, I'm not talking about the horse whisperer here, that's different, but a whisperer is one who habitually engages in gossip or a gossiper. That's according to one of the lexicons. All right, so interesting point that the Greek word for slander is the same word as the word for devil. John 8:44 tells us something quite interesting. Very famous statement. Jesus was talking to some of his adversaries at the time and referring to them as that their father is the devil, and they were acting just like him. And he says in verse 44 that the devil was a murderer from the beginning and does not stand in the truth because there's no truth in him. When he speaks a lie, he speaks from his own resources, for he is a liar and the father of it. So when you think about it, Satan was actually guilty of the first example in the Bible of slander and also responsible for starting the first false rumor recorded in Scripture. I could have asked that as a trivia question, a.k.a. trick question perhaps. Where is the first recorded example of a rumor or slander in the Bible? And this would be it right here. It's in Genesis chapter 3. Starting verse 1, it says, "And the serpent was more cunning than any beast of the field, rather, which the Lord God had made. And he said to the woman, 'Has God indeed said, you shall not eat of every tree of the garden?'" He knew better than that. He was baiting her. He was trying to say something that was false. It was a rumor, starting a rumor. And the woman naively said to the serpent, well, oh no, that's not right. We can eat of the fruit of the trees of the garden, but of the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God has said, you shall not eat of it or touch it, lest you die. Then the serpent said to the woman, you shall not surely die. Come on. God knows the day that you eat of it, your eyes will be open, and you'll be like God, knowing good and evil. So really, that's a form of slandering God. It's impinging on God's credibility and saying, well, you know, yeah, God told you that, but let me tell you the rest of the story. I mean, he's holding out for me. He just didn't want competition. I know, you know, and because I'm, so I mean, no, who knows what all he said, but it was a malicious rumor, slander. So that's where it began. And notice that he's a murderer. Why does it say he's a murderer? Because he led Adam and Eve to sin, and the penalty of sin is death. Satan is the one that was responsible. And it all started with this rumor or slander. So slander is a pretty serious thing, and that's not as common, thankfully, in church, really, because slander is something that really has malicious intent behind it, where people a lot of times know better, and they're striking out at someone to really cause damage to that particular person. Gossip, oh, well, that's a different story. A gossiper is a person who has privileged information about people and proceeds to reveal that information to those who have no business knowing it. That's the way one person put it. Gossipers speak of the faults and failings of others or reveal potentially embarrassing or shameful details regarding the lives of others without their knowledge or approval. Even if they mean no harm, it's still gossip. And that's something, like I said, that has been around for a long time, as we will see. I don't know if you ever thought about it in this way before, but one of the commandments recorded in Exodus 20 and verse 16 is you shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. Well, if you pass along a rumor that's not true, guess what? It's false witness. It's against your neighbor, oh yes, whoever you're telling it on. And like I said, once it gets past the first or second person, it's probably got some degree of error in it. Usually, if I mention something, I might even announce it. I don't usually announce something that I hear until it comes through official channels. If I do say something, I'll say, well, you know, I heard this second or third hand. So therefore, you have to take it with a grain of salt because there could be some inaccuracies to it. I try not to say something that, unless I'm reasonably certain that it is valid and accurate. But anyway, gossip and rumors are, again, a form of bearing false witness. A few chapters later in Exodus 23, in the first verse, it really talks about, even though the word rumor is not used or gossip, I think you can see that's what it's referring to, because it says here, you shall not circulate a false report. Do not put your hand with the wicked to be an unrighteous witness. And that would be, you know, kind of a planned thing that people scheme something to be a false witness. And certainly one example comes to mind there is the individuals who tried to convict Jesus Christ of sin. You know, they got together and put together this story that they're going to put out there about him that was, they pretty well knew was false. And of course, Paul had individuals do that as well. Leviticus 19 and verse 16. Here we get the word talebearer. Leviticus 19, verse 16 says, you shall not go about as a talebearer among your people, nor shall you take a stand against the life of your neighbor. So there again is a commandment not to repeat gossip. Now, when I say repeat gossip, I'm not talking about that humorous line from Hee-Haw. Anybody remember that one? As women get together and say, listen carefully, we're not going to repeat gossip. So listen carefully the first time. You know, they're going to say it once, but they're going to repeat it. Not what this is saying. I mean, you don't spread gossip, period, as that's certainly not the right kind of approach that we need to have because of all the damage it can cause. What about the appeal of gossip and rumors? Why is it so popular, it seems like? Why do rumors and gossip get so much playtime? Proverbs 18, verse 21 pretty much acknowledges that there is an appeal to gossip and rumors. So by the way, since we're quoting Proverbs, which were written by Solomon, we know that Solomon had to deal with gossip and rumors. And I'm sorry, ladies, I can't resist this, but with 300 wives and 700 concubines, that's a little understandable. Or the other way around, whichever it was. Does it really make a difference whether it's 700 and 300 or 300 and 700? But I'm sure that those ladies sat around and did an awful lot of gossiping, probably about him. So he had a lot to say in the Proverbs about gossip. And what it says here in Proverbs 18:21, death and life are in the power of the tongue. The tongue is like dynamite, or it's like fire. We'll get to that a little bit later, because there's a very definite comparison there as well. Capable of doing a lot of good, or capable of doing an awful lot of damage. Death and life are in the power of the tongue. And those who love it will eat its fruit. Those who love it. The Bible acknowledges that there are people who just enjoy hearing the latest rumors and gossip. Of course, you think about the philosophers at Athens, that wasn't really gossip. They just wanted to hear some new thing you could talk about, you know. But there are people who love to hear gossip. That's why soap operas are so popular on TV, you know, because people just kind of love that intrigue of the gossip and rumors. Psychologically speaking, it's a little bit easy, I think, to understand at least some of the reasons why gossip and rumors have such appeal to some people. Gossiping about others can be a way of building yourself up by making others look bad. You know, in other words, it's kind of, I illustrate this by a story from Three Stooges movie. Some of you may have seen it. I won't ask how many of you are familiar with the Three Stooges. I don't want to embarrass anybody. But anyway, the Three Stooges were in the military, and the officer gets up and says, "We need 3 volunteers for a dangerous mission. You probably won't come back alive." He said, "I'm going to turn my back, and I want 3 men to step forward." You know what happened? They all went like this, and everybody else took a step back. and the guy turned around and says, "Oh, thank you, gentlemen." That kind of illustrates the point. In other words, they didn't step forward, but the fact that everybody else stepped back put them forward. So the idea here is by putting other people down, that tends to exalt us. One of those quirks of human nature that makes gossip and rumors very appealing. And the other one is probably even more common, and that is it's a way of exalting yourself as a source of exclusive information. Did you hear? Oh, people go, "What? Oh, what? Tell me, you know. You heard it here first. You heard it from me." You know, there's vanity in that, of being able to tell somebody something they've never heard before. Looking at surprise on their face is like, "Oh, boy. Man, you're really something. I mean, you got the latest scoop. Isn't that great?" No, it's not great, especially if it's a rumor or gossip that may not even be true. And really, gossip and rumors appeal to our baser instincts. It's kind of similar to another thing that you've probably noticed. You ever notice that if there's an accident along the highway, everybody wants to stop and look? Why? I don't know how many of you have done this. When I was a kid, I lived in a very small town. Whenever I'd hear the sirens, I'd jump on my bike and, you know, ride out there and see what happened. And I've seen things that I still can't forget. I never should have done it. But there's this morose appeal to negative stuff that people have. And, you know, I don't know how you explain it, but I think we all know it's true. Verse 8 of Proverbs 18 is a very interesting statement, which is translated 2 very different ways, by the way, because the Hebrew language is capable of a wide variety of meanings. This translation says, and I think this is the New King James, "The words of a talebearer are like tasty trifles," in parentheses, "wounds." There's a lot of difference between a wound and a tasty trifle. I mean, if you had your pick, you say, "Would you like some truffles or trifles or whatever, or would you like me to stick you with the knife?" That's a pretty easy choice. So I'm not sure what the connection between those is, but it says, "And they go down in the inmost body." The preacher's commentary has a very interesting, insightful analysis of that passage based upon the translation of tasty trifles and why that is compared to gossip. It says the danger lies in the combination of attractiveness, quote-unquote tasty trifles, and penetration of the inmost body, literally the chambers of the body. Our mouths water to savor the latest gossip, and then we find the words stay with us a discomforting length of time. We keep remembering the vicious rumors, toying with the possibility that they are true, delighting in them and despising them at the same time. And we become angry with ourselves for listening and with the talebearer for feeding us such tangy yet indigestible stuff. He says, we were served chocolate mousse at a recent banquet. A friend of mine, conscious of calories, contrasted the tempting taste of mousse with the lead weight that became in his stomach. Ever had that experience? You eat this real sweet thing and it's, oh, it tastes so wonderful. And then you get indigestion from it and think, why did I do that? You know? He says, you might disagree with the accuracy of his evaluation of the mousse, but that description is precisely how the teachers viewed the impact of gossip. It tastes sweet, but it turns bitter in your stomach. So I thought that was a very insightful comment about how gossip appeals to people, and yet afterwards it just sticks with you, and you wish you could forget it, and you can't. So let's talk about some of the other destructive results of spreading gossip and rumors. Not only did Solomon deal with gossip, since he wrote about it, so did David. Psalm 41, verse 7 is only one of many passages where he talked about people plotting against him. In this particular case, he said, all who hate me whisper together against me. Against me they devise my hurt. There's something about whispering, you know? Why whisper it? Oh, you don't want anybody else to hear it. And oh boy, you whisper something to somebody. Boy, this must be choice. No, I won't tell anybody. You ever notice that there is no such thing as secrets? It's always going to leak out one way or the other. It only takes one person to spring the leak. Especially in the day of the internet, Facebook, and all of that. There are no secrets. Because there's always somebody that's going to take that and pass it along. Let's look at Proverbs 11, verses 12 and 13. Proverbs 11, verses 12 and 13. Here Solomon writes, he who is devoid of wisdom despises his neighbor, but a man of understanding holds his peace. That means keep your mouth shut. So the implication is a person without understanding shoots off at the mouth something they shouldn't have said. So right in the next verse, we see what we're talking about here. A talebearer reveals secrets, but he who is of a faithful spirit conceals a matter. Revealing secrets, another way to put that is betraying a confidence. I will say this, if someone comes up to you, I'll tell you something if you promise not to tell anybody. Don't ever make that promise. You know, what if they say, I'm going to kill somebody? You can't make that kind of promise. So, but there are reasons for sometimes keeping some information confidential. Maybe someone wants to share something. Maybe they're hurting and they need someone to unload to, but they don't want to get back to their wife or their husband or their boss or whoever. There are reasons why people sometimes have information that needs to be kept secret. My point is, don't ever put yourself in a situation where you promise, like signing a blank check, that you're not going to tell anybody about what you're about to be told. I tell people, and I've had people say this to me, church members and even family members sometimes, they'll say, well, this is confidential. I don't want you to tell anybody. On rare occasions, I will not even tell my wife. But most of the time, I'll tell them, well, I won't share it with anybody, but I will tell my wife. Because as husband and wife, we're a team in the ministry. And a lot of times, you know, she might probably most of the time, she's more perceptive than I am in some things. I can share it with her. And I don't know how you ladies do it. I mean, you can come up with an answer just like that, and we're still sitting there trying to figure out the question. Anyway, that's another whole subject, I guess, left brain, right brain thing or something. But again, there are reasons for keeping information confidential and not going about like a talebearer. And once the word is out, you can't take it back. You can't unring the bell, as the saying goes. And you know, when someone finds out that they shared something in confidence and that leaked out, how do you suppose they feel? Well, we can read the answer in Proverbs 25 and verse 23. Proverbs 25, verse 23. I'm going to read this in the New Living Translation. Which says, as surely as a north wind brings rain, I don't know if that's true here or not, but apparently it was where he lived, so a gossiping tongue causes anger. An angry response. And, you know, rightfully so, because if a person has a good, close friend, they should be able to trust that person. And when they find out that they've said something in confidence to this person, and this person has revealed it, anger results. And can go even one step further if you back up to Proverbs 16 and verse 28. Proverbs 16, 28. Not very complimentary statements about the, well, look at here. Well, they let anybody in these days, don't they? Long time no see. There are people on tape wondering, what's going on here? All right, so Proverbs 16, 28. A perverse man sows strife, and a whisper separates the best of friends. You talk about damage that gossip can cause, can actually separate the best of friends. And, you know, maybe right now you're thinking about examples of situations you know about where that very thing happened. So gossip and rumors are very, very destructive. And God certainly is very clear in saying we should not engage in those. Well, the Apostle Paul had to deal with gossip, rumors, slander. A lot of people slandered him. One of the things that they said in Corinth is recorded in 2 Corinthians 10 and verse 10. You know, it's kind of hard, I would imagine, for someone in his position, stand up there and preach to people, write letters to them, show them love, when he knew what they were saying behind his back. 2 Corinthians 10:10, for his letters, they say, are weighty and powerful, but his bodily presence is weak and his speech is contemptible. Boy, that's a great thing to say about your minister, isn't it? That's what they said about Paul. Chapter 12, verses 19 and 20. He'd fought back, though. You know, he didn't pull any punches with him. Verse 19 of 2 Corinthians 12, he says, again, do you think that we excuse ourselves to you? We speak before God in Christ, but we do all things, beloved, for your edification. For I fear lest when I come, I shall not find you such as I wish, and that I shall be found by you such as you do not wish, lest there be contentions, jealousies, outbursts of wrath, selfish ambitions, backbitings, there's that word again, whisperings, that word, both referring to gossip, rumors, conceits, tumults. He had his hands full, especially in Corinth, with people who spread rumors and gossiped. What he wrote to Titus, one of his fellow ministers, in chapter 2 and verses 2 and 3, about older folks, older men in this particular case, and older women. Because there are certain, you know, strong points, weak points that go along with, stereotypically, I'll say, with male and female genders. And with young people versus older people, there are certain things you kind of have to watch out for. And Paul writes to Timothy, a young man, saying that the older men should be sober, reverent, temperate, sound in faith, in love, in patience. The older women likewise, that they be reverent in behavior, not slanderers, not given to much wine, teachers of good things. doesn't mean to say it's okay for the older guys to slander, it's not the women. But the implication is maybe it was more of a problem, you know, in the females, the older ladies at that time. Probably some truth in it, maybe even today, possibly. In 1 Timothy chapter 5, I'm going to read this in the New Living because it flows better. This is something that Paul wrote to Timothy, another young minister that worked with Paul. And he was talking about what we today call church assistance, putting someone on church assistance, which is, in this case, in that culture, was, I think, almost exclusively females, because females, they didn't have the benefits we have today. I mean, if someone wasn't married, they had a tough go. I mean, there are a few ladies that, like Lydia, that was a seller of purple, had her own business and that type of thing. But even in the Old West, it was that way. You know, basically, the only way that women could survive in the Old West is either to get married to somebody or be a prostitute. I mean, that was your choices, pretty much. Things have changed since then, thankfully. But anyway, Paul is talking about the qualifications of a woman being able to be put on church assistance, and also included in a group of ladies that travel with Paul to take care of various things that ladies can do better than guys can. So he says here in verse 9, starting, a widow who is put on the list for support must be a woman who is at least 60 years old and was faithful to her husband. She must be well respected by everyone because of the good she's done. Has she brought up her children well? Has she been kind to strangers and served other believers humbly? Has she helped those who are in trouble? Has she always been ready to do good? The younger widows should not be on the list because their physical desires will overpower their devotion to Christ and they'll want to remarry. Then they would be guilty of breaking their previous pledge. In other words, they would want to get off of the group of ladies, you know, that were serving Paul. So he said, well, you know, basically the younger ladies, let's just leave them off, because he says, I advise these younger widows, verse 14, to marry again, have children, and take care of their own homes. But what he said in the previous verse there, verse 13, he said, and if they're on the list, they will learn to be lazy and will spend their time gossiping from house to house, meddling in other people's business, and talking about things they shouldn't. So that was apparently a problem in the culture at that time. Not sure of all the reasons for younger women to be involved in rumors and spreading gossip. The problem was also in Thessalonica. I suppose it was probably in every congregation, but it was addressed to the congregation there in 2 Thessalonians chapter 3 and verses 10 through 15. You've probably heard the old saying, idleness is what? Anybody? The devil's workshop. Yes. Well, here's a scripture that probably is based on. 2 Thessalonians 3, verses 10 through 15. Paul writes, for even when we were with you, we commanded you this, if anyone will not work, neither shall he eat. Pretty strong words there. For we hear that there are some who walk among you in a disorderly manner, not working at all, but are busybodies. Now those who are such, we command and exhort through our Lord Jesus Christ that they work in quietness and eat their own bread. Verse 14, and if anyone does not obey our word in this epistle, note that person and do not keep company with him that he may be ashamed. Yet do not count him as an enemy, but admonish him as a brother. In the context, that's talking about someone who is not willing to work, but spends his time spreading rumors and gossip. And he says, stay away from him. And this is one of the scriptures we use talking about suspending a person from services, because they're walking, it says, in a disorderly manner. They're causing problems in the congregation by gossiping and spreading rumors. So he dealt with it very, very forcefully, the problem that existed there in Thessalonica. Part of the reason there might also have been that the people there, you can kind of read this in 1 Thessalonians, that even Paul thought that Christ's return was imminent. And so apparently some of the guys thought, well, no sense going out and get a job and just can't wait, you know, for Christ to return and sit around and talk about whatever comes up, you know. Well, that's not what Paul had in mind. So he had to write some very, very forceful instructions to them. What does God say about the consequences of spreading gossip and rumor? And I don't mean the effect, but I mean, what does he say about a person who engages in this? Back to Proverbs again, chapter 13 and verse 3. Proverbs 13, verse 3. Solomon writes, "He who guards his mouth preserves his life, but he who opens wide his lips shall have destruction." Pretty dire consequences he warns about there. Psalm 101, verse 5. This is something that apparently is quoting God himself. Psalm 101, verse 5. And this is slander, again, which is more serious than gossip. "Whoever secretly slanders his neighbor, him I will destroy." Wow. "The one who has a haughty look and a proud heart, him I will not endure." In other words, God's saying, I'm not putting up with this. Someone's secretly slandering his neighbor, I'm coming after him. And you know, you don't want God coming after you, that's for sure. Romans chapter 1, I want to point out something here in verses 28 through 32. Another old saying is, you can know a person by the company they keep. Right? You all heard that before? Well, I want to show you the company that the word whisperers and backbiters is found in these verses, Romans 1, verses 28 through 32. We usually read this for other purposes, but interesting to glean this point from it in the context of problems of gossip and rumor. Verse 28, "Even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a debased mind to do those things which are not fitting, being filled with all unrighteousness, sexual immorality, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, evil-mindedness. They are whisperers, backbiters, haters of God, violent, unloving, unforgiving, unmerciful, who, knowing the righteous judgment of God, that those who practice such things are deserving of death, not only do the same, but also approve of those who practice them." Look at what those are listed with. You wouldn't tend to think, well, just whispering and backbiting, oh, that's no big deal. Yeah, it says those who practice such things. It didn't say except for whispering and backbiting. It says are worthy and deserving of death. That's about as serious as you can get. But stop and think about it. Remember that scripture we quoted earlier that said that death and life are in the power of the tongue? You can edify a person by what you say, or you can tear a person down by what you say. And again, I don't have examples, but probably all of you are familiar with examples where that type of thing has happened. Proverbs 6, verses 16 through 19, passage we oftentimes quote about six things that God hates, seven being an abomination to him. You ever analyze that from the standpoint of gossip and rumors in the context of these seven qualities? Verse 16, "These six things the Lord hates. Yes, seven are an abomination to him. A proud look, a lying tongue." You're spreading information that's false. That's telling a lie. You may not know it's false, but before you spread something, you better check it out and make sure that what you're saying is true. Well, I'm kind of getting ahead of myself there. But anyway, it can be a way of spreading lies. Hands that shed innocent blood. I mean, rumors sometimes and false information or gossip can result in violence. Someone passes along some kind of information that's false. It might be, and this is totally fictitious, but supposing someone accused, there are country songs about this, by the way, that point this out. I mean, there's a lot of good information in some country songs, but basically this guy was heard the rumor his wife was cheating on him, so he left her and she ended up, you know, dying in despair and everything. Well, it was because of a false rumor, gossip. So, you know, shedding innocent blood can be the result of slander. How many people were hanged in the Old West because of false testimony of someone? You know? A heart that devises wicked plans. Feet that are swift in running to evil. A false witness, there it is, who speaks lies. And anyone who sows discord among brethren. You know what? Spreading gossip and rumors can result in all of those things. So, Psalm 34 and verse 13 puts it very plainly. It doesn't say stop gossiping, stop spreading rumors, but it certainly includes that. Psalm 34, 13, keep your tongue from evil and your lips from speaking deceit. So again, don't gossip, don't spread rumors. But how do we avoid that? How do we avoid gossip and rumors? The first thing I think we all need to do is acknowledge that we are capable of doing this. And probably we have. Probably every one of us in this room has passed along some information that we found out later was not accurate. Maybe you didn't know it at the time. You might have had the best of intentions. I don't know if it's true or not, but I heard that former President Harry Truman said the worst thing you say about a person is they had good intentions. And you think that through, that means they didn't get it done right, okay? So, regardless of your intentions, the milk is still in the carpet. Remember I told that story. Regardless, if people are hurt, it doesn't make a difference whether they had good intentions or not. You're still responsible for causing damage. And secondly, pray for God's help. Because if you acknowledge that you're prone to gossip, you really need to realize we need God's help to avoid that. Even David prayed that of all things, a man after God's own heart. Psalm 141 verse 3 tells us that. Psalm 141 verse 3. This is a good thing to include in our prayers on a regular basis, I think. He said, set a guard, O Lord, over my mouth. Keep watch over the door of my lips. In other words, in the vernacular, he would say, you know, don't let me say something that I shouldn't say. In a very poetic way he expressed it, set a guard over my mouth, or keep watch over the door of my lips. The door of my lips means don't let those doors open to where gossip and rumor flow out. Ask God for that help. Third point, think before you speak. Very simple thing. Think before you speak. It's so easy to just blurt something out without thinking first. There's very good advice in James 1 in verse 19. I'll read it in the New Living Translation. If we would all practice this, there'd be a lot less gossip, a lot less rumors. James 1:19, understand this, my dear brothers and sisters. You must all be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to get angry. Now, I would say there would be a caveat to that first one. You should not be quick to listen to gossip, okay? That you don't do. But slow to speak, yes. Slow to get angry, most definitely. Number four, consider your motives before listening to or repeating rumors. Consider your motives before listening to or repeating rumors. Kind of an extension of the previous point, thinking before you speak. You think, okay, I just heard this news from somebody. Okay, so what do I do with this? Should I tell other people? There are a lot of questions to ask. First of all, is the information relevant to you? I've had, over the years, many, many calls from people, maybe from other church areas, or maybe someone from one of the congregations I pastored that heard something about what was supposedly going on in some of the church area across the nation. And they were all upset about this. And basically, I'd politely tell them, you know what? That's none of your business. It doesn't affect you. Okay? Don't worry about it. And another question to ask is, do you have the whole story, or do you understand the context of the situation? Because you hear this one little thing, you know, such and such happened to so and so, or the minister did this, or, you know, whatever it was. And you don't even know the person in some cases, if it's another congregation. You don't know the whole story. In fact, no human being knows the whole story about anything, do we? We see only a certain part. Only God sees the whole picture. For those of you that remember Mr. Waterhouse, he made a very interesting statement one time. Because people always have a tendency sometimes to get upset about something that's going on in the church. And they'll, you know, talk to other people, boy, did you hear what's so-and-so happened, blah, blah, blah. He says, you need to pray about it. And he says, there's no telling what God will do once he finds out what's going on down there. Get the point, like he used to say? I mean, God sees it all. God allows it. I've had to deal with situations even recently which I felt that there were problems in the way it was handled. And I have communicated that. But you know what? It's not up to me to fix it. It's not up to me to worry about it. Jesus Christ, the head of the church, savior of the body. I don't want to face him someday and say, why did you think you had to step in there? That's my job. You know, so, hey, look, in this day and age with the internet and Facebook and all that other stuff, smartphones, dumb phones, whatever, you're going to hear all kinds of stuff. So you need to ask these questions. Is it relevant to you? Do you have the whole story? Do you understand the context of the situation? And even then, the next question is, would sharing this information be helpful or hurtful to you and or others? So you tell somebody else, is that going to help that person? Is it going to help you? Or is it just something that you're just venting your frustrations? And you dump it on somebody else. And they take that chocolate mousse because it tastes sweet, and then they swallow it, and then they get indigestion spiritually. Then they have a problem with it, and they got to talk to somebody else. And they tell their side of the story, and before you know it, it's way, way out of hand, distorted. And bottom line is kind of an extension of that. Would it help you and others and or others to love God and each other? Would this information be helpful and edifying to be able to love God better or love others better? And I think probably most of these questions, you'd have to say, admit, you know, this isn't really relevant to me. I don't have the whole story. I don't understand the context of the situation. God knows what's going on, and he'll take care of it. I don't need to worry about it. And probably sharing this information wouldn't be helpful to me or anybody else. In fact, it might be hurtful to them. And it certainly is not going to help me love God more and love fellow human beings more. So ask those questions first, and you're not so likely to share it. Let's take a look at some of the characteristics of love described in 1 Corinthians 13. Let's just put gossip and rumors to the test and just see an answer to that last question about loving others and loving God better. We'll ask the question, do gossip and rumors help you to develop this kind of quality? Love suffers long. Just hearing these tidbits of things going on, and it's not usually, you know, rumors about good things that happen to people. It's usually bad stuff. You ever notice that? It's usually rumors are. So-and-so got kicked out of the church, or so-and-so had this happen, or so-and-so has this problem, or what have you. Is it going to help you to have more patience and suffer long? I got to tell you, you know, I've been there and done that many, many times. People call me up and they say, do you know what's going on in such and such a church? Boy, that minister is saying this and doing that. That doesn't help me to say, oh boy, that makes me feel so good. I get mad. And I have to say, wait a minute. I don't even know the whole story here. But it doesn't help that. It doesn't help you to be more long-suffering. Help you to be more kind? I don't see any connection there either. Love doesn't envy. Love doesn't parade itself. We said one of the appeals of spreading rumors and gossip is making you look like this great source of information? And that certainly doesn't fit it parading itself. I mean, it's the opposite. It does parade the self and puffs up, as it says in the next phrase there. It's not puffed up. Does not behave rudely. Is it rude to slander somebody or gossip, spread rumors? Absolutely. Does not seek its own. I mean, frankly, spreading rumors and gossip is a very selfish thing to do. Is not provoked. I'll tell you, rumors really provoke people. They hear this and they get mad. I do. I trust all of you do. If you hear this rumor, that's this nasty thing that took place, and you think that's not fair. You know, the minister did this wrong, handled it wrong, whatever. You know, ministers make mistakes. Sure we do. We handle things wrong. God allows it. But he allows it so we can all learn from it. It's kind of like he sits back and says, let's see how everybody's going to handle this. They're going to think, well, boy, God missed that one. Christ isn't on the job this time if he allowed that kind of thing to happen. He's got plans to bring good out of it, or according to the way I understand Romans 8:28, he wouldn't have allowed it in the first place. So you don't have to worry about that, you know, unless it involves you, unless it involves the congregation you're a part of. And even then, there are qualifications involved. We still need to exercise self-control. If there's a concern regarding the congregation here, then, hey, you know, talk to Mr. Vieira, talk to me. We've had to deal with things recently where people have heard things, and they come to us for clarification. That's good. Then you can go ahead and deal with it. You don't just spread it around. That's not the way to do things. Bears all things. Believes all things. Now, again, exception. Believes all things doesn't mean you should believe everything that you hear, rumors and gossip, okay? In fact, one of the old sayings is, don't believe anything you hear and only half of what you see. That's pretty good advice. You know, isn't it? Sometimes you see something happening and you don't understand that person's motivation for doing it and you misread it. Hopes all things, endures all things. Basically, it's talking, love is optimistic. That's what it's talking about. It's not talking about believing everything you hear at all. Ephesians 4, verse 29 is talking about the motives, you know, in terms of what you say to other people. Our conversation on the Sabbath, during the week. Ephesians 4:29, let no corrupt word proceed out of your mouth, but what is good for necessary edification, that it may impart grace to the hearers. Boy, that'd be a nice thing to have up in the mirror when you get up in the morning, you know? To make it a goal to whatever things you say, let it be something that is good, something that is edifying, encouraging to others, that can impart grace to the hearers. Very important. Next point. Track down the source of the rumor to find out the truth. People oftentimes don't do that. They'll just act as if it's true. Track down the source of the rumor to find out the truth. Go to the horse's mouth, as they say. Check it out. And even then, sometimes, you know, maybe that person that you heard it from, or maybe the person that did something or whatever, you still don't get the whole story. So it's a good idea. If it's something that you've heard that's disturbing to you, come and talk to us about it. Talk to me, talk to Mr. Rivera, talk to Mr. Stitt when he's back and healthy. Because we might know more about it. If I know something, I'll tell you. I'm not going to be hiding something or, you know, defending something that I don't feel is appropriate or whatever. I'll be truthful with you. You know, I'm a what you see is what you get person, or I try to be anyway. But, you know, we've got to speak the truth in love. Ephesians 4:29. Well, that's not 29, that's this verse, but I think it's in Ephesians. I don't have my notes, but somewhere there in Ephesians as well, to speak the truth in love. Point six, stop the chain and encourage others to do the same. Stop the chain. You've all heard of chain letters, right? Pass this on, you know, and all this kind of stuff. Well, gossip and rumors are like chain letters. Stop the chain with you. There's an analogy in the Bible I said I'd mention later when the time has come. In James, the third chapter, verses 5 and 6, the tongue is likened to a fire. It says, "See how great a forest a little fire kindles." We can all relate to that now, can't we, with the smoke filling the air here in the Medford area. Living in Central Oregon, I can definitely relate to that because we've been evacuated twice, including the first year that we lived there. Verse 6 of James 3, "And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity." This time of year, and everything is dry, it's warm and dry temperatures, doesn't take much of a fire to start a destructive forest fire. There's one example in not too far from where we live, about 10 miles, I guess, which is quite a long ways. I mean, we've been as close as a mile away from a forest fire before, so 10 miles is a pretty safe margin. But there was a guy and his girlfriend or whoever that were out camping with their pickup and the camper, and they had a campfire there, and they didn't put it totally out. It ended up starting a forest fire that raged through about, I don't know how many hundred acres, destroyed his truck and his camper. It's by carelessness. A little bit of hot coals, even, that can start a forest fire. You know, they always say, put out the fire quickly and completely. Make sure it's cold. Don't just leave ashes there. Those can last a long time. You get a mound of coals sitting up there. Sometimes it can be days that there's still hot coals underneath. A little bit of wind blows, and before you know it, something gets caught on, and you got a big forest fire. One tactic of firefighting is to build what they call a fire line by bulldozing down trees and removing brush in order to get rid of the area of fuel for the fire so that when the fire comes to that point, it doesn't have anything more to burn, and they can put the water and the chemicals to it, get it put out. Now, what does this all have to do with gossip? Well, guess what? There's a scripture back in Proverbs again in chapter 26, verses 20 and 21. Proverbs 26, verses 20 and 21. What I've been talking about here, especially in the fire lines, where there is no wood, the fire goes out. Okay? Fire can only burn as long as there's fuel. And where there is no talebearer, strife ceases. Comparison. As charcoal is to burning coals and wood to fire, so is a contentious man to kindle strife. So my point, stop the chain and encourage others to do the same. Don't give more fuel to the fire by spreading what you heard to someone else. That just spreads the fire and destruction that much further. And that's what I encourage people to do if they come to me and they heard this rumor. And I tell them what I know about it. And I say, okay, now that you know that, I want you to go back to whoever you talk to and give them this additional information and encourage them to do the same thing. Now, you can't stop totally, because, I mean, that can spread out, who knows, you know, who all hears about it. If it happens to get put on Facebook or something like that, there's no way of knowing who all is going to hear that. But at least you can do your part. If you have been guilty of spreading a rumor or gossip and you find out later that what you said wasn't accurate, go back and clarify it with people in order to remove that fuel for the fire. I knew a guy years ago, in fact, I used to work for him when I was not employed by the church a long time ago. He had a tactic that really put an end to gossip. Somebody started gossiping to him. He'd say, wait, excuse me, before you go any further, I just want to tell you that everything you tell me, I'm going to go to that person you're talking about and tell him what you told me and tell him who it was that told me. Whoa, boy, that's like throwing some water on the fire for sure. That shuts people up in a hurry. Well, maybe that's a far out way to do it, but I can think you see it can definitely work. Anyway, you know, that's how you stop rumors, is just stop spreading it. Get rid of the fuel, just like is done with fires this time of year, wildfires. And a final point, stay away from people who gossip and spread rumors. We already read that in 2 Thessalonians 2, where Paul said, you know, avoid people like that. Stay away. Proverbs has something to say about that as well. Proverbs 20 and verse 19. I'm going to read this in the Good News Bible, because the Hebrew there is a little bit hard to understand. The Good News Bible puts it this way, Proverbs 20, verse 19. A gossip can never keep a secret. Then he says, stay away from people who talk too much. Now, most of the translation is a person who slanders. But the Hebrew says, literally, who opens wide their mouth. So we talk about someone being a big mouth. Okay, that's what it's talking about. There's another proverb, I don't have my note, that says, in a multitude of words, sin is not lacking. The more we talk, the more likely we are to say something that's not appropriate. And I talk a lot, so I remember that passage. And but anyway, so stay away from people who talk too much, it says. Especially, if it's gossip. Well, I think we all know by now, if I haven't concluded this yet, that gossip and rumors are still a problem today, even in the church. There's a prophecy you're all familiar with in 2 Timothy chapter 3, verses 1 through 5, where it describes characteristics of the last days. And it says, know this, that in the last days perilous times will come. Verse 2, for men, that means people, not just men, males, will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, unloving, unforgiving, slanderers, without self-control, despisers of good, traitors, headstrong, haughty, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, having a form of godliness but denying its power, and from such people turn away. So there again, stay away from people who spread gossip. And frankly, if it becomes enough of a problem, the pastor has to step in and tell this person, yeah, you got to quit doing this. It's causing problems in the congregation if you're continually spreading this kind of information. Gets back to what I said earlier, you know, that communication is one of the most important aspects of human life. And it's one of the areas where we have the most problems. Matthew 12, verses 33 through 7. I'm going to get down to wrapping this up here. It says, either make the tree good and its fruit good, or else make the tree bad and its fruit bad. For a tree is known by its fruit. And the individuals Jesus was addressing, he says, brood of vipers, how can you, being evil, speak good things? And there's a very important principle next that applies in so many other ways as well. For out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. A good man, a good person, out of the good treasure of his heart, brings forth good things. And an evil man, an evil person, out of the evil treasure, brings forth evil things. But I say to you, and this certainly applies to gossip as well, and rumors, that for every idle word men may speak, they will give account of it in the day of judgment. For by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned. I don't look forward to that, do you? God says, or Christ says, did you care to comment on what you said, you know, this situation? You know, we're going to have to just say, I fall on the mercy of the court, right? Pretty important subject. Controlling a tongue is a challenge for all of us to one degree or another. And as I said earlier, we've all been guilty of saying things we shouldn't. James chapter 3, back to that again. I want to read several verses here and one more passage before we finish. Let's all admit that this passage here fits all of us. Verse 2, we all stumble in many things. If anyone doesn't stumble in word, or it can be translated offend, you know. If anyone does not stumble in word, he's a perfect man, able also to bridle the whole body. Indeed, verse 3, we put bits in horses' mouths that they may obey us, and we turn their whole body. Look at ships, even though they're so large and driven by fierce winds, they're turned by a very small rudder, wherever the pilot desires. Even so, the tongue is a very small little member, and yet it boasts great things. And here's the verse we read earlier. See how great a forest a little fire kindles. And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. The tongue is so set among our members that it defiles the whole body and sets on fire the course of nature, and is set on fire by hell. For every kind of beast and bird, a reptile, creature of the sea, is tamed and has been tamed by mankind. But no man can tame the tongue. You know, you have your bronc riders that are able to take a wild horse and domesticate it. Taming the tongue, not so easy. It says nobody is able to totally tame the tongue. So where does that put us, right? It's an unruly evil full of deadly poison. With it we bless our God and Father, you know, and we pray. And with it we curse men who have been made in the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceed blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not to be so. Does a spring send forth fresh water and bitter from the same opening? Can a fig tree, my brethren, bear olives, or a grapevine bear figs? Thus no spring yields both salt water and fresh. Who is wise and understanding among you? Let him show by good conduct that his works are done in the meekness of wisdom. But if you have bitter envy and self-seeking in your hearts, do not boast and lie against the truth. This wisdom does not descend from above, but is earthly, sensual, and demonic, because Satan is the first liar and the author of lies and gossip and rumors and slander, all those qualities. For where envy and self-seeking exist, confusion and every evil thing are there. But the wisdom that's from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality, without hypocrisy. Now the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. Spreading gossip and rumors does not bring peace. It causes conflict. Finally, in Philippians 4, verses 8 and 9, I'm going to read this in the New Living Translation again. And now, dear brothers and sisters, one final thing. Fix your thoughts on what is true and honorable and right and pure and lovely and admirable. That rules out gossip and rumors, doesn't it? Think about things that are excellent and worthy of praise. Keep putting into practice all you learned and received from me, everything you heard from me and saw me doing. Then the God of peace will be with you. One of the things I've always looked forward to coming down here is the fact that after services, the conversations are about the Bible, about God, about His plan, about the sermon or the Bible study. And lately, there have been rumors going around. And I just want to encourage all of you to stop and think about the things we talked about today with regard to that. Because I think we can see that God hates rumors and gossip. And they cause a lot of damage. It's something that we all have to take seriously. We all have been guilty of that. And let's focus on these positive things. We have an awful lot to look forward to, an awful lot to be thankful for, an awful lot of good things to talk about. God's promises, God's intervention in your life, the blessings that you enjoy from God. These are the things that we come together in the Sabbath to hear about, to edify each other, and to keep going in a very negative world, which is filled with bad news and gossip and rumors and slander. I know of people who have said, I don't even want to go to, not for here, but I know somebody from another congregation that said, I'm not going back there because I don't want to hear that stuff. Let that never be said about us. We should look forward to the Sabbath as being a wonderful time to edify and encourage each other and talk about those positive things. Anything that concerns you, things you've heard, you know, pick up the phone, call one of us, and we'll tell you what we know and encourage you and help you to get through it. But think twice before you hear something, before you spread it to somebody else. And hopefully these things we talked about today will help us to be able to enjoy the Sabbath that much more.